It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station. The right advice at the right time. If you'd like to call in, 800-818-2255, or these local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good
morning, Ben.
So what are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to continue our discussion from last week about homeowner associations.
Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned that so many folks now live in some sort of development, subdivision, planned community, a no-lot line, townhome, condominium.
Mm-hmm.
This really is the new way of owning real estate, if you will. And we want to kind of decipher that and allow people to call in if they have any questions about their home ownership. And in the meantime, just kind of talk about some of those issues.
Yeah, you know, this is, we mentioned last week, this is a quasi-governmental organization, the Homeowners Association. So, Wes, as you mentioned last week, they got to walk and talk like it, too.
That's right. You know, when we're talking about a homeowners association, you know, this is set up as a nonprofit corporation. By developer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just as far as how this normally works, obviously someone has, or some company has set up this subdivision at some point in time for purposes of, you know, wanting to make money off mm-hmm. the property. So there's all the money they put into it with regard to the infrastructure and the planning and, you know, the roads, the lights, the common areas,
mm-hmm.
the lot development, the surveys, the stormwater permit. There's a lot that has to go into developing a subdivision. And then, you know, hopefully if the development is successful over a period of time,
mm-hmm.
then those lots, you know, get sold out to the point where the developer owns less, fewer and fewer and fewer of the lots to the point where hopefully they don't own anything. And we are dealing with, you know, the governing documents being the bylaws and mm-hmm. the covenants, declarations, things that we've talked about before that developer put in place.
Right. Well, let me just ask you a question right
yep.
here. Is there a point in time when that is tipped? And so now he sort of hands it off. I mean, he may be set up the nonprofit, as you said, the Homeowners
right.
Association, but at some point in time, he's not a voter any longer.
That's right. You know, that's a great question. In most cases, in subdivisions, when we're talking about the power relating to decision making,
mm-hmm.
it's going to come down to voting. Who has, you know, what power with regard to votes? And usually it's one vote per lot.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, the developers place in the governing documents kind of a safety net for them so that they have a little more control. So maybe they have two votes per lot or three votes per lot until they get to a certain point, and then that control then shifts over to the, say, majority owners, whoever the purchasers
right.
are
right.
with regard to the property. And that's not at a certain time for every subdivision. It's different for one to the next, depending on what the governing documents say.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you understand why that's the case.
It's got to get it up and rolling.
Well, you got to get it up and rolling, and developers have an idea of what they think the subdivision is going to be about, what type of homes are going to be there, what kind of restrictions there are going to be, what kind mm-hmm. of lack of restrictions there are going to be. And so it could be that the subdivision over time takes on an appearance that's maybe a little bit different than what the developer originally intended. And it could be that there is a, you know, maybe some particular issue that property owners are interested in. Maybe it becomes more of a boating community and people
right.
really want
right.
to have that right to, you know, park a boat in their driveway for a period of time, or depending on the circumstances, there could be other things, of course. So, you know, when you're talking about making modifications to those governing documents, especially the declarations or covenants, you know, that's not necessarily a very easy thing to do as far as noticing up a meeting,
mm-hmm.
You know, getting all the votes, proxies, absentee ballots, all the things that need to be done. But it becomes a lot easier if you're the developer and you own the majority of the lots and you also have three times the
right.
votes, or even if you don't own the majority of lots, if you have three times the votes. You know, if there's just a need for a modification, then, you know, your majority votes, you know, are going to carry the day. So a lot of times if you look back at subdivisions and you look back at their documents that originally put on record, you'll see the first set of covenants. And then maybe within a year or so, you'll see the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment. And usually those amendments are pretty minor things.
Right.
Just little, nuances, little minor, alterations to the original documents. But that's, you know, during the time that this subdivision is becoming whatever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, another thing that's interesting as we kind of walk through this development type process chronologically is at some point in time, the developer, will be conveying the common area mm-hmm. over to the association.
Oh, so the developer will retain ownership of that until,
yes.
until a certain time?
Yes. So usually you have language, not always, but usually you have language in your governing documents about when that is to take place
mm-hmm.
In general. And you have that contract right for the association to require the developer to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, homeowners associations out there, that might be something, you know, those members of homeowners associations that are listening,
mm-hmm.
those board members that are listening this morning, that's something that you may want to check on just to make sure that has been done.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Because it's not automatic.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes developers, they develop, they get their bank loan paid off, and they move on.
Yeah,
and that's,
or they sold it.
That's one of the last things that they think about. Or that would be happening.
And you know, I would imagine there's a lot of the older neighborhoods that have, I mean, the only common area is maybe the sign out front.
That's right.
And some other areas are going to have a pool and tennis courts. And so you, depending on that degree, you really need to know.
All different types of subdivisions. So mm-hmm. no question about that. So what we're talking about there is it could be the roads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be, like you say, the pool area. It could be the park. It could be the tennis court. You know, these type of areas.
Roads aren't automatically state roads, are they?
No, not at all. In mm-hmm. some subdivisions, they're owned by the developer and then transferred to the association. In some subdivisions, they're originally set up as, you know, maybe a state-owned or government-owned, usually state-owned road,
mm-hmm.
But you still have restrictions on the property around it, just depending on, you know, mm-hmm. the circumstances. So it's important for subdivisions, homeowners associations, to not just accept these common areas when the developer is ready to convey them.
Mm-hmm.
For example, let's say that the roads have become in a deteriorated condition over time.
Yeah.
Well, we don't necessarily want to take on that financial burden. It may be necessary for repaving. It may be necessary for some, you know, have conversation about curb and gutter or whatever the governing documents require so that we're not in a position where, you know, we just take this on and it ends up being a, you know, financial burden for the property owners in the subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one thing. Next thing with regard to that, in most subdivisions, you'll see in the covenants, especially the newer subdivisions, a stormwater permit reference.
Mm-hmm.
The Division of Water Quality in the state of North Carolina is going to require a stormwater permit for most subdivisions. So that there's certain compliance with regard to how we're going to deal with our stormwater.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
My goodness, we live here on the coast. We know all about this. So let's say that we're in a situation where the developer has an obligation to convey the common area, roads, so on and so forth, and other common area to the association. And that would include the right to maintain easements and those type of things
mm-hmm.
because normally you have these easements that run along the roads for utilities and maintenance and potentially stormwater issues,
right.
The swales, potentially the cut-throughs, the little, the swales are cut-throughs in front of the house,
mm-hmm.
houses, that have the culvert underneath the driveway, those kind of things. A lot of that is not just because that's the way we decided to do it. A lot
mm-hmm.
of that is because that's what the Division of Water Quality required.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure before we take that property on that we get the stamp of approval from the Division of Water Quality with the state of North Carolina so that we don't take on that property and the permit is mm-hmm. then transferred. That's the most important part. And then we, as the permittee, being the association, has the financial and legal obligation to bring the property into compliance.
Everybody who lives in the Homeowners Association at some point in time has had an assessment, you know, and so let's talk a little bit about what that means
right.
and what your role is in determining that, too, coming up in a bit here. If you'd like to join us, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here today. And, of course, let's talk legal with Harvell and Collins and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us today.
Just before we go into some more detail, the concept here, of course, Ben, is that homeownership is one of the most significant investments that any of, you know, our listeners happen to have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, be it a condominium, a townhome, a house, a freestanding home, whatever the case might be. And, of course, what is happening here is that, you know, the law encourages the highest and best use of any type of real estate. And so it's important that our property value be analyzed. And, of course, your property values can be highly affected by whatever the restrictive covenants happen to be, whatever enforceability there is within the homeowners association. We see certain homeowners or certain developments, if you will, that do not enforce their regulations uniformly. And so, you know, the subdivision then goes down in value, if you will, because it's not being maintained consistent with, you know, the restrictive covenants. On the other hand, you have subdivisions that are highly governed and watch, you know, the paint colors that go up on the house.
Sure.
Watch, you know, the type of mailboxes that are placed, the types of road lighting that are there. And, of course, the values then go up. So these things are very important, and there absolutely is the right in the state of North Carolina for subdivisions, homeowners, developers to come forward and to govern reasonably their use of the property.
Okay. You had mentioned, Wes, about stormwater, and again, that's such a huge issue around here. You got to do that right.
Well, no question about it. And the way that works is that the stormwater or Division of Water Quality issues that stormwater permit as far as the development and what they're going to require with specificity. There's detail in it. And that's issued to the permittee, who is the developer, you know, to start with in almost every case. So at some point in time, like I was mentioning a moment ago, that permit is then going to be transferred over to the association.
Right.
Well, a case I'm dealing with in particular right now, the Division of Water Quality contacted the particular homeowners association indicating you have multiple violations and these things need to be brought into compliance. So we then pull the permit, and we see that the permit is still in the name of the developer.
Oh, really?
The developer's deceased.
Hmm.
And actually it was in the name of an LLC, and the LLC is actually dissolved, and the owner of the LLC is deceased. So we've got multiple issues here. So in speaking with the Division of Water Quality with regard to that, you know, they're a strong agency, a good agency, certainly here in the state of North Carolina. They're going to do what they can do with regard to dealing with this deceased family and basically the heirs or members of this LLC, and extend that as far as they can, as far as the law goes, to require those individuals to pay for these problems in the particular subdivision. But they legally would have the right to force the transfer of the permit and then require the association to then take care of these expenses.
Okay. Well, you've stepped on a couple of things there.
Oh, a lot of things.
A lot of minds there. So, I mean, when an LLC is dissolved, is there still responsibility for the LLC's actions maintained by somebody?
Well, first of all, we look at it, whether it was dissolved properly. Okay.
Right.
We have to look at the statute with regard to that. If it was not done as per statute, then you don't get the benefit of full dissolution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, normally you have to contact your creditors, so on and so forth. If there are any, you have to disperse all of the assets, so on and so forth. But, Ben, you know, what's interesting about this particular situation is that we know that the developer, through the LLC, still owns two lots in the subdivision. So it's strange that they would have dissolved and still own real property, and that's an issue. So if push comes to shove in this particular case and the state is not able to, you know, get these individual family members, so on and so forth, to bring the stormwater issue into compliance, then my client, the homeowners association, would have the right to sue. We still have the right to sue this LLC, and we know that there are two lots there that we believe to be not encumbered by a mortgage. So we would most likely be able to get those lots, sell those lots, and use the money
to apply. Yeah.
So that's the last case scenario. I mean, you know, that is something that we're willing to do, but we expect the state to be aggressive in trying to do it, you know, take care of this first. So, you know, how do we get to this point? You know, when the development of houses take place, and we've got the bulldozers and the graders and the dirt's brought in and all this kind, well, all kind of stuff happens to lots when things are getting built. Swells, you know, they get filled in, and berms, they get knocked down, and culverts, they get filled in. It just, it can become a very expensive problem. So, you know, in this situation, we're hoping that the state is going to be able to force compliance. The state very much appreciates our proactive involvement in this, as opposed to being quiet about it and hoping nothing's going to happen.
Just goes away.
Well, they really appreciate the fact that that I have reached out and communicated with them about it, and they're going to therefore try to work with us as much as possible.
Well, this in a sense relates to the call that we got last week about a homeowners association that wasn't active and didn't and walk and talk like one. And so here's the case where some due diligence was not performed at some point in time, and the permit wasn't examined.
Well, so, yeah, that's correct. You know, well, the permit was put in place, and then everyone forgot about it.
Sure.
I mean, listen,
Division
of Water Quality doesn't drive through every subdivision all the time. How do they end up out there?
Yeah.
Someone calls. Someone's complaining. Someone's got an issue with regard to, you know, stagnant water in a certain area in the subdivision. They find out that there's a stormwater permit. There's a call. They go check on it. Ooh, we've got lots of problems out here. Then we get to the legal issue of who has the responsibility to deal with it. You know, what's also interesting about that is that pours over into real estate law. When we were talking about selling our property, well, we've heard of the residential property disclosure statement. We've talked about that on the program, right? Well, that's required by statute. If you're selling a property that's not a new property, then you have to make certain disclosures with regard to the property. Now, you can say on that disclosure form, no representation about whatever the thing may be, but then the potential buyer is going to say, what do you mean no representation? You know, what do you know about this situation? So one of the line item issues on that is special assessments or any assessments that are upcoming, violation of any government requirements, those type things. So if the subdivision knows about the stormwater issues and the individual property owners do, and someone wants to sell the property, they're going to have to disclose it. So what does that mean to a potential buyer? Well, that means that I may be buying a property that might be subject to a huge special assessment in the future to fix this problem.
Right.
So, you know, it reaches the tentacles of this reach pretty far, you know, when we talk about all these various issues. So,
So, again, this is the quintessential ounce of prevention, pound of cure thing.
That's right. But subdivisions out there, if you're in that situation, homeowners association, don't take on that permit until you get the stamp of approval from stormwater.
Right.
Do that first. Also, don't take on those roads. Don't take the common areas until we're certain that they're up to, you know, reasonable standard as far as repair goes.
And examine who owns what.
Yeah.
That's right. And
sometimes homeowners associations are a little confused about what the common area is, so on and so forth. Just go to the courthouse. If you don't have it, pull out the original plat map. It'll show what the common areas are. That's easy. You know, you see these deeds that have meets and bounds descriptions in them, and you can't tell what in the heck they're describing. But with a subdivision, you'll have that original surveyor's map, and it'll show all that common
area. Well, say it gets to a point where assessment has to be made. Can the individual property owners have a do they have a voice? What's the voice? How does that happen in assessments made?
They have a very weak voice. You know, in the event that the governing documents include a right to require a special assessment, then the likelihood that that special assessment is going to go through is very high. Now, there's going to be a voting procedure on this, but and it depends on, again, I come back to governing documents, covenants, declarations, same thing there, bylaws. That is going to include all of the language and what's necessary in order for there to be a special assessment imposed.
The special assessment sometimes, Ben, can just be a vote of the board of directors.
Right.
Which is just a very small group. It doesn't have to necessarily go to every homeowner. Again, it's going to depend on what the governing document says.
More to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Welcome back here on the Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. You can find them online at harvellandcollins.com or call for an appointment at 726-9050. And today we're talking about one of our favorite subjects because almost everybody here is affected by it one way or another.
Well, Ben, we talked about this, but it's a good place to end today. You know, when you purchase property, you in a development, then of course, you know, you are a part of a democracy at that point. And that plays back to this issue of, you know, can our board of directors, you know, issue a ruling that everyone has to pay a $5,000 assessment? And the answer is that in many subdivisions, condominiums, planned urban developments, absolutely they can. Now, again, as Wes and I are saying, you've got to look at the underlying documents. But I would say that, just in general, I would say that most of the ones that I have seen, it is within the province of the board of directors. It's not a situation where, you know, it's really not in the best interest of a subdivision that, you know, 100 people come together to make a decision. We elect our board of directors. They elect their officers. We elect these people to make good decisions on our behalf, just like a democracy. If you don't like the decisions they make, then the next time there's an election, let's vote that board of directors out and vote a new board of directors, a new group in. So anyway, the bottom line here is that you as a buyer of a condominium, a lot in a subdivision, really need to understand this democracy that you are very quickly becoming a part of if you close.
It's not the pure democracy. It's a representative republic like we are.
Thank you, Ben. It is.
So because we elect representatives to voice our interest there. And like you said, they can vote them out.
They can. But in the meantime, you have to live by the consequences of those decisions.
If you want to find out more about your homeowners association and see what kind of pitfalls that may be in front of you, you want to give them a call at 726-9050 at Harvell and Collins, online at harvellandcollins.com.